David Gill says getting the country on firm financial footing again starts with getting the rich to pay their fair share in taxes. He says those earning $250,000 a year or more should be paying at the same rate they did when President Clinton was in office.
I think that, the deficit is very important, but there's more than one way to beat a deficit. There's spending cuts and there's also revenue increases. And to have our millionaires and billionaires pay once more is just pivotal toward restoring our economic health in this country.
Republican 13th District nominee Rodney Davis of Taylorville says existing Bush-era tax cuts should be extended. He says business owners' uncertainty over their tax bill is keeping them from investing in new employees. But if elected, Davis also pledges to seek out bipartisan ways to reduce a $16 trillion debt.
I'm not somebody who favors across-the-board spending cuts, but what we have to do is go in line by line in the federal budget in every single agency and ensure that we're able to cut out all the waste and fraud.
Independent John Hartman of Edwardsville agrees with Davis that reducing the debt provides the best opportunity for getting the economy back on track. But Hartman also believes there's an upside to allowing the so-called fiscal cliff to kick in, forcing budget cuts that lawmakers have thus far been unable to agree on, which, if nothing else, will reduce the deficit. And yet Hartman believes a short-term stimulus is necessary. But he says it will require a pay-as-you-go discipline and suggest a 2% payroll tax in the first year of that stimulus.
That we pay for that in years 2, 3, or 4, built into this very same stimulus legislation, pay for it by higher revenue then to make up for it or cutting programs. But we've got to go back to that pay-as-you-go discipline that we had and was effective in the 1990s and led us to a balanced budget.
Hartman also supports the Simpson-Bowles Commission plan to rein in national debt, while Davis says he likes parts of it. Democrat David Gill also blames Wall Street's influence on government for problems ranging from the jobless rate to finding affordable health care. He cites the 2003 prescription drug bill as an example. Gill says it barred the country from negotiating on drug prices.
When you have the bargaining power of 50 million Medicare lives, to forego that bargaining power, to give that up, ultimately was a $2 trillion gift to the drug companies. And it's the Pfizers and the Mercks who are putting money into the campaign pocketbooks of Washington, D.C. politicians.
Rodney Davis says he has an all-of-the-above energy policy. That includes offshore drilling for oil, research into clean coal technology, and continuing subsidies for alternative sources.
That means building new baseload generating facilities, be it nuclear, be it coal, be it natural gas. And I'm also in favor of continuing to invest in wind, solar, and hydropower. But we have to have that all-of-the-above approach so that America, in the end, should be an energy exporter, but we are not.
John Hartman says data from various agencies like NASA and the National Science Foundation prove that carbon emissions are contributing to climate change. He says the country should be concerned with how that's affecting the environment and suggests one measure passed by Congress as well as some states.
A cap and trade experience with acid rain in the Northeast that was effective, and basically all parties believe and have confidence that was an effective policy, and it has cleaned up the problem.
Hartman says cap and trade will make emissions expensive, and then the free market will fill in with its own sources of alternative energy that don't contribute to climate change. David Gill also cites concerns about climate change, but believes Congress has been hurt by corporate donations and subsidies to large oil companies. He says that money should instead be invested in wind energy and other alternative sources of power. Whoever wins this race will be a freshman in Illinois' new 13th congressional district and face an uphill battle to convince a Congress that spent a lot and cut taxes to be more fiscally responsible. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
Tomorrow we'll hear how the candidates stand on health care. Much more on their positions and other races in this fall's election are online at will.illinois.edu/election. Illinois voters will have the chance to amend the state constitution this fall. A question on the ballot asks voters if they want to make it harder to enhance government employees' retirement benefits, including city and state workers, university employees, and teachers. Backers argue it will help the state from piling up more debt onto Illinois' already underfunded pensions. But there's no shortage of critics urging people to vote no, and a lawsuit trying to get the question tossed completely. Amanda Vinicky has more.
The pension question will be first on your ballot. Even before you cast a vote for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, you'll be asked to vote yes or no on the constitutional amendment. Today, it takes a simple majority of legislators to increase retirement benefits. If the amendment's approved, 3/5 of the General Assembly has to be on board. Sounds simple enough. And when legislators voted to put the question on the ballot, it passed overwhelmingly and with little debate. It took all of 3 minutes and 44 seconds for it to get through the Senate.
Constitutional Amendment 49, having received the required 3/5 constitutional majority, is adopted and is declared ratified.
When House Speaker Mike Madigan introduced the plan, he described it as tough medicine Illinois needs to swallow.
Because a review of actions of the legislature and governors over the last several years, take your pick on the number of years, say 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, take your pick. But the record would say we need this medicine.
But I was hard-pressed to find an organization that backs it. Even the Illinois Policy Institute, a conservative group clamoring for the state to cut government employees' pensions, is pretty much ambivalent.
As an individual voter, I'm going to be voting no.
The Institute's Christina Rasmussen says it doesn't go far enough.
So Constitutional Amendment 49 is a classic case of fake reform.
Politicians hide behind these kind of gimmicks. They put something on the ballot, and then people think the problem's fixed. The problem isn't fixed. We still have a pension problem in Illinois. We still have to address it.
Senator Mike Jacobs, a Democrat from the Quad Cities, is one of only two legislators who voted against it. Supporters say they used a constitutional amendment, so it's harder to tamper with should future legislators try to get around it. But Jacobs says it's unnecessary, that passing an ordinary law would suffice. It's a concern shared by Illinois Federation of Teachers President Dan Montgomery. Of course, public employee unions are fighting it for the obvious reason that it'll make it harder for their members to get better benefits. But Montgomery also says the amendment is irresponsible. He says it's going to affect not just state employees and teachers, but also police, firefighters, and city workers. If it passes, Illinois' nearly 7,000 local governmental bodies will also need to reach a supermajority.
To pass just about any contract they're ever going to sign. Now that's what in other places is called the tyranny of the minority.
What really has state workers fired up is an argument made by John Kent, a business professor at the University of Illinois. Employees are circulating emails with warnings to vote no, based on Kent's belief that the last sentence of the amendment could strip a provision already in the Constitution that protects retirement benefits.
The fact that this is a 700-word avalanche in a constitutional amendment that is so dramatic should really cause people to pause and say, what is Springfield doing here?
There are plenty of those who dismiss that theory, including Steve Brown, the spokesman for House Speaker Mike Madigan, who sponsored the amendment. Brown says anyone who's accepting that legal interpretation has a fool for a lawyer. Even so, John Marshall, law professor, Ann Lucine, who was a research assistant for the drafting of Illinois' Constitution in 1970, calls the amendment a catastrophe.
I gave it an F.
She says the wording is lousy, its effects ambiguous, and she says if it passes, Illinois will be stuck with it pretty much forever. It would take another constitutional amendment to get rid of it.
They're really coming up with a very complex amendment that will do nothing except give us a lot of litigation.
Already, that started. A Champaign County lawsuit says the instructions printed on the ballot are too confusing. The effect, if it does pass and become part of the Constitution, is anybody's guess at this point. As Lawrence Massal of the Nonpartisan Civic Federation notes,
most of the issues surrounding the Constitution and the constitutional amendment won't have final interpretation until they're reviewed by the Supreme Court.
Massal says he's going to vote yes. He says it won't reduce Illinois' pension debt, but it won't hurt the cause either. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping Central Illinois families achieve financial security and protect their home, family, and property since 1990. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 29th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the quilt maker Harriet Powers, born into slavery outside Athens, Georgia, 1837, famous for the quilts that she made, which told a story sort of like a graphic novel, such as her Bible quilt of 1886, which now hangs in the Smithsonian, and her pictorial quilt of 1888, displayed in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. It's the birthday of the editor of the New Yorker magazine, David Remnick, born in Hackensack, New Jersey, 1958. Worked as a sports reporter for the Washington Post, then as their Moscow correspondent, when he witnessed the collapse of the Soviet Union, from which he wrote a book, Lenin's Tomb, The Last Days of the Soviet Empire, came out in 1993, by which time he'd begun as a staff writer at The New Yorker. It was on this day, 1929, more than 16 million shares of stock were sold off in a panic in the stock market crash. It was called Black Tuesday. $30 billion disappeared on this day, 1929. 1,300 banks closed within a year, 30% unemployment. And within 4 years, of the 25,000 banks, 11,000 had failed. The Great Depression was in full swing. The economy had been booming in the 20s, so people kept speculating in the markets. They borrowed money to buy stocks, thinking that they could turn around and sell them at a profit. And so they went bankrupt. It was the most disastrous trading day in the stock market's history. It's the birthday of James Boswell, Edinburgh, 1740, a charming young man who wanted adventure, and so he went off to London. He kept a diary, and instead of describing his own thoughts and feelings, he wrote down scenes from his life as though they were from a novel, described his friends as though they were characters, recorded long stretches of dialogue. Everybody who met James Boswell liked him. Voltaire and David Hume, Rousseau, the philosopher, liked him so well, and Rousseau's mistress liked him so much that she had an affair with Boswell. And then in 1763, he met the scholar and writer Samuel Johnson. They became friends, and Boswell kept a close record of everything Johnson told him. And he wrote his Life of Johnson in 1791, long after Johnson's death. He had to fight with his editor to keep in all the little odd details, like things Johnson had said to his cat and what kind of underwear he thought women should wear. The book became a big bestseller, and it's a big part of the reason why Samuel Johnson is still famous today. Here's a poem for today by Denise Levertov entitled Bedtime. We are a meadow where the bees hum. Mind and body are almost one as the fire snaps in the stove and our eyes close.